Okay, it's 6:30. If you could please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrich.
Here.
Trustee Rafter.
Here.
Trustee Vandenhoven is here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Gast is absent. Trustee Dennis.
Here.
Are there any proposed modifications to the agenda this evening? Is there anyone visiting who'd like to see an item moved up or down on the agenda? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda as submitted?
So moved.
Trustee Genrich, second. Trustee Harris. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Are there any announcements this evening?
A reminder, there will be no spring election in Alloway on February 17th. Our next election will be on April 7th.
Can you remind us of the rules for having or not having a primary election?
If there were more than however many seats are up for election, if there are double that many, we would have. But Alloway passed an ordinance that we do not have primaries, so if only trustees are on the ballot, we wouldn't have a primary either way.
Good, thank you. Any other announcements this evening? Hearing none, we will move on to public appearances. Is there anyone who'd like to speak this evening?
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oldwood Avenue, Green Bay. I've been talking on this before you guys for 2 years now. Been working on the intensive survey, architectural survey of our properties and in the village of Alloway. And when the report was written, I demanded that my name be removed from the report because it was in violation of the federal guidelines that regulate architectural studies. And the village has used that study to now make a raise ordinance you're going to vote on a raise ordinance that is part of that historic preservation ordinance that was passed. And to make a long story short, I've been talking with Steve for well over a year on this. I've asked him to contact the National Park Service and look into them, and Steve told me that's not the place to go, and that if I have complaints about the meetings and the way the meetings are done, I need to talk to somebody on the county level, and I thought that was really bad advice. So you're going to be looking at a raise ordinance today that's put out, and it's a very bad idea, and I think that the entire historic preservation ordinance needs to be reviewed, and the intensive survey needs to be reviewed. And I think that it's shocking that I demanded that they take my name off, and when they took my name off in order to beef up its credibility, they put Penny's name on there and Randy's name on there and Jim's name on there and Steve's name on there as part of their effort to boost up the credibility of that report. So you're going to be voting on a pretty bad report that should be reviewed by the National Park Service. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak this evening? Hearing none, we'll move on to item 5, action regarding the request for a temporary Class B retailer's license for St. Matthew's Athletic Booster for a cabin fever cookout on the 28th of this month. Oh, yeah. For the record, Trustee Gast arrived at 6:33. Is there a motion with regard to this item?
Petitioner is present.
I'm sorry?
The petitioner is present.
Oh, the petitioner is present. Trustee Gast, do you have a motion?
Yeah, I'll move to approve the request.
Is there a second? Trustee Harris seconds. Discussion before we hear from the petitioner? Sir, would you like to step forward and just let us know kind of what you're planning on doing and who you are?
Sure. My name is Rob Atwood, 831 Green Valley Avenue here in Green Bay. The purpose for the Class B license is a cabin fever cookout at St. Matt's to help fund some miscellaneous expenses such as volleyballs, basketballs, some practice jerseys for the athletic club. After Mass at 4:30 on the 28th of February, it's a little fun gathering, so minimal sales, a couple of hamburgers, brats, and a beer or two, and that should wrap it up. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in.
Thanks.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I abstain.
Oh, I'm sorry. One abstention. Trustee Dart. Action regarding the public works minutes from the 15th of January, specifically with regard to sidewalk plowing costs. Mr. Berndt, I'm not sure exactly what you want us to take action on, so before I ask for a motion from you.
This information is a follow-up to when you had your budget hearing for this year, and the question about what does snow plowing cost if we have some sidewalk snow plowing, and that's what this is to address. At the tail end of the memorandum, it gives you a cost of about $1,750 per snow event when we plow sidewalks. And what's included in here is sort of an update of where we are at with sidewalk snow plowing and sort of the pros and cons of where we're at. The bottom line basically is we've been slowly implementing over the last 3-4 years the full policy. And the full policy on sidewalk snow plowing is implemented. It's kind of a learning process for residents and commercial businesses to get used to shoveling under the lighter snow events. The heavier snow events we plow,
right.
And it's kind of explained in there. There's really no action to be taken on it. It's just brought forward to address that particular question that came up earlier so that you have that information and could kind of see where we're at.
Okay. It is under a business section of the agenda, so the action would be to accept and place on file, right?
Okay.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't something you wanted action on. I will take a motion and a second before I entertain discussion if you have any questions for, especially for Craig. Trustee Gast?
I'll move to accept and place on file.
Is there a second? Trustee Dennis seconds. Discussion? Trustee Harris?
I just had a question or two of things in the minutes. In terms of the joining, it's not the snow plowing, but the League of Municipalities Stormwater Group, we're looking at joining. What is the annual cost for joining that group?
It's $400 a year.
And then the other question I had was on the snow plowing. We're getting calls from the department asking not to plow sidewalks. There's certain people that don't want that done.
There have been a number of residents over the last couple of years that have asked us to not plow their sidewalk. I've gotten a few. Jim Sigalski's gotten more. So actually, when they plow, they do like a mile. They'll go down mile, and they'll skip some houses as they go because those residents are asking us not to plow. The reason for that is that when we're either using the plow or the snowblower, depending on the intensity of the storm, we don't get the sidewalk clear like you do when you use your own snowblower or your shovel. It leaves a residual, and those residents are saying, I'd rather shovel it myself because I do a better job. That's the reason.
Okay.
Thank you.
Trustee Rafter?
As we talked about in the Public Works Committee regarding the snow removal, the concern is when plows come by on Webster and the other major arteries and they plow and put all the snow on onto the sidewalks, and then residents are responsible for getting rid of that. And in our current policy, it says that even if we do plow the sidewalks, the resident's still responsible for clearing it down to the, or keeping it maintained. So I would encourage us to look. I don't think the cost is actually relevant because we're paying our people to be on the job anyway, and we talked about this during the Public Works Committee. We're not paying overtime for it. We have staff here to do it, and if it's a safety issue or if we're able to plow the streets or the sidewalks, I don't know why we wouldn't. So I would ask us, I would ask that we consider doing that more frequently, and then still allowing the or requiring the residents to keep it clean thereafter, but at least once after a major snowstorm.
If I could add,
are you suggesting a change to the policy, Trustee Rafter?
I would. Yeah.
If you recall, I know we went over this last year, but we also went over it when we put together the current policy, must be 3 years ago or maybe 4 years ago. And one of the things that we decided we would do, well, there's really two things as it relates to Holloway Avenue and Webster, where we have the higher snow amounts because of the county snow plows. One was we wait until the county is in plowing, so we coordinate with them. They let us know when they're making their last pass, then we clean the sidewalk. And so if a resident doesn't shovel, but they're in that snow plowing of the main road by the county, that's not part of the, that doesn't come under the policy in terms of the resident has to shovel. It isn't until after everything is cleared. But the other thing that we decided to do at that time, and we have been doing it since, you know, we may plow after a snowstorm, and then the following week, or 2 weeks later, whatever it is, when we look at the sidewalks, if the sidewalks need, in general, need cleaning, then we'll go do them again. So we do watch that, and we did budget for extra times of going out just when it looks like it needs it and it's overall. Now, that could be the snowblower, it could be the sidewalk plow, it depends. But we typically do plow those about a dozen times during the course of the winter on those main roads. So, yeah, I agree with you, and we do look for that. And do that when that would be of benefit to do that. And if there's ice, we will salt it as well. So we kind of watch for that because we're looking for when it's more than what you would reasonably expect everybody to take care of on their own. That's what we look for.
So doesn't that kind of conflict with our policy? I'm just saying we should take a look at our policy and really figure out if we're being consistent with the policy or not.
Well, I think the reason it's not living in there for the extra times is because how do you define that in a policy? This is a policy that is intended. This is what's published in All About Alloway and on the website, so when a resident reads it, they know what the guidelines are. That's what this is for.
Okay.
Have you had particular comments about the plowing of sidewalks?
Well, that's a question.
Is it not working?
I was just going to ask that. Oh. When we brought it up during the budget, I'm assuming this question came up during the budget because there were questions about were we doing the sidewalks frequently enough. Am I incorrect or correct on that? Why did this even come to? Why did we even start talking about this?
Because we changed. I mean, we implemented the policy and we were sort of trying to gradually line up with the policy and get residents used to the idea that they had to plow. plow their own sidewalks. Because for years, we plowed them, and our policy was not consistent with that. And so we started following our own policy, but instead of just, you know, one winter saying, all right, you're cut off, we tried to, like many times we do, I mean, we've had ordinances on the books that we just haven't consistently enforced, and we said either change the ordinance or enforce them. But okay, instead of enforcing them as, you know, starting it tomorrow and surprising residents, we sort of wanted to get folks used to it. And so that's why it came up, is that we're gradually making our way to actually following the policy the way that it was written.
Okay, I know last year Riverside and Webster were bad. Now, last year was a bad year.
Right.
But our policy didn't allow for us, or didn't support going out and cleaning those off, I guess, because they weren't. So, why was that?
Riverside is one that we plow under the snow plowing guidelines where the county is plowing, because it's the same situation as Webster. But what happened last year, at least part of the time, when you look at the sidewalks and say, well, they weren't as clear as they should be, at least part of that situation was the, number one, the high amount of snowfall we had. We had snowfall virtually every other day for 6 or 7 weeks in a row. But we also had a lot of our crew committed to the brush hauling as part of the tree trimming. And so, quite honestly, we could not handle all of the snow plowing work that we would normally do in conjunction with all the other work. So we did a kind of a balancing act to do as much as we could in each of the two areas, but we could not keep up with both of them, really, is what it boiled down to, because of the work going.
Okay. So we treat Riverside as we do Webster?
Yes, we do.
Then we should change our policy to reflect that. Paragraph 2, we just say Webster and Alloway, not Riverside. Okay, cool.
I recommend that we put this on the agenda for the next meeting to have a discussion to actually change the policy. I do think it has budget implications. I would not be a proponent of us changing it yet this winter.
Right.
And I do think it has budgetary implications, although they're not spending more time. They're already out there. That's not how we work things. We cost things out, and at least theoretically, if they weren't plowing the sidewalks, they could be doing something else that won't get done if they're plowing the sidewalks. So I think it ultimately does have budgetary implications, plus the use of the equipment as well. I'm not trying to cut off conversation. I just think we should, if we want to talk about officially changing the policy, we should delve into it, and then it would be my assumption that we wouldn't change it until this, you know, upcoming November, December.
Okay.
Any further discussion?
Just a question. When we notify people that they have to shovel and you get the 48 hours, how do we notify?
We have a form letter, and the operator writes the address and the time of inspection on it and puts it in the back door of the home.
Oh, okay.
Fills out a second form, brings it back here. A copy is made, and it's mailed. So okay, it's official notice by mail, but there's also one in the back door. We don't always mail a notice. Usually the first time we go out, we'll knock on the doors. We did that a week and a half ago when there was about 1 inch, and it was only the commercial properties that seemed like they didn't shovel. So we knocked on about 40 doors. It took about a half a day. And if, I don't know if you know, just look at the properties as you drive down Webster now, you'll see they're all shoveled. So that was a quicker, faster, better way to do it, and people appreciated it. So that's the two things we do.
Well, that makes sense, because I thought if we mail them, that could take forever.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. Excellent.
And you can imagine that it could be a expensive and labor-intensive process if we're knocking on doors or sending lots of letters. So the more that we change this policy, the more of that we're going to have to do, because the more confusion it's going to cause. And so that's why I'd be really leery, unless there's compelling reason to, and we know something isn't working, to change the policy the way that it's written, aside from adding, you know, things like Riverside. Mm-hmm. But you know, what we want to do is make sure that our ordinances are clear and that we enforce them the way they're written and that people understand them and get them up to speed. And like I said before, don't go from not enforcing an ordinance at all to enforcing it strictly overnight, but sort of ease people and let them know that we're going to be doing this, and then just sort of have everyone on the same page. So, again, I'm kind of leery of changing this policy too many times because it's just going to create confusion on the part of residents. Anything further? Trustee Gass.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, we changed it 3 or 4 years ago, and we've gone through this educational phase for the last 3 or 4 years. It's actually gotten much, much better. You know, from year one, when nobody knew what we were talking about, and everybody was confused about what they were supposed to do, and you gradually started seeing more and more people complying. And I was surprised at the last meeting when it was primarily the commercial, you know, folks, and you figured they'd be the first one on board since, you know, they're a business. But, you know, once you knock on the door once or twice, hopefully most of them will comply.
Anything further? The motion is to accept and place on the file. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Trustee Rafter, would you like to see another discussion or more discussion at the next meeting?
I'll look into it.
Okay. Item 7, action regarding the adoption of Ordinance 2015-02, raising of buildings. Would you like to hear from Mr. Fuller before I entertain a motion on this? Unless there are objections, I'll suspend the rules. Mr. Fuller.
All right. Well, basically what you see in front of you is two sections of our ordinances, both relating to raising of buildings. Chapter 13 is part of our building code. And then Chapter 424 was adopted a few years ago. And that's kind of just the standard certified local government ordinance that's out there. And so what the Historic Preservation Committee noticed is that in Chapter 13 makes no mention of Chapter 424. And so unless you knew of the ordinance, you would have no idea in filling out a raising permit that you're also required to have a review period of 30 days if your building was historically significant. So we added a section in Chapter 13 to note that. And then Chapter 424, we pretty much left the same. I mean, there is a lot of changes that appeared in here, but overall, that was just kind of a reorganization. The biggest change that we did make was changing the review period of historically significant homes as identified in this ordinance from 30 days to 60 days for residential homes, and from 30 days to 90 days for non-residential homes. And that's just to gain a little more period to kind of preserve these homes if a homeowner chooses to raise them or wants to redevelop a site. Other municipalities, Fond du Lac, they have a review period of 6 months for residential properties and a year for non-residential properties, and here has a review period of 6 months. So it's 60 days isn't too far off line. As far as what the community does.
Any questions for Mr. Fuller? Trustee Harris?
The memorandum that the Planning Commission received from the Realtors Association of Northeast Wisconsin, is that part of the discussion at the January 26th meeting?
That was, yes.
Okay, so their concerns were addressed at the meeting.
Correct.
Okay.
Jennifer Sundstrom actually brought these same concerns up at the Historic Preservation Committee meeting back in, I believe, November or October. And they agreed with her as far as allowing the permit process to run, any building permit process to run concurrently with the review process. And actually that wasn't not allowed, but it wasn't spelled out. So we included that in the section 1309-2B. But then I believe that the feeling of the checkbox, it just, you know, we're required as a certified local government to review these homes for 30 days, so there's really no getting around that review process unless we want it to not be a CLG.
Thank you.
Trustee Rafter?
Trevor, why did we choose to go 60 and 90 days on that?
We had a discussion going 6 months, and we really felt like with the number of properties we have, some of these other communities have much larger number of properties that they're reviewing, and therefore would need a longer amount of time. 60 days and 90 days they felt was an adequate amount of time, because really how this stands now, the only homes currently it would apply to would be homes or buildings in Heritage Hill and one building on Tax Street. So a lot of work for really not too many homes, but the survey did, the intensive survey did identify over close to 150 homes that this could affect. Doesn't affect right now.
And the most recent, the building that was torn down on Riverside, was that listed as historic as being part of the old Holgrave complex?
That was not identified in the
survey. Not identified. Okay. And the Planning Commission obviously has signed off on this, basically after reviewing it.
Excuse me. You don't have the floor, sir. I'm sorry. Trevor, Mr. Fuller, what's the primary issue here as it relates to historic buildings? Did it go back to the intensive survey and the accuracy of that survey?
No, the biggest issue was just being able to have a little more time to review buildings and find means to preserve them. Is that what you're asking?
I think so. I guess so. I'm asking you what the primary issues are. I mean, there's a lot of red on this document, so a lot has changed. Mm-hmm. What are the primary issues in, because this is related to not only the raising of buildings, but it's related to, as Mr. O'Rourke alluded to before, is the designation of buildings as being historic or not historic, and it refers to the process that one has to go through to get historic a home, you know, designated as historic. So what I'm asking is what are sort of the main issues that we're really voting on or changing here?
The main issues would be to extend the review period. There is a few things, the certificate of appropriateness. If a homeowner who had a home listed on the state, the National Register, or if the home was locally designated as historically significant, they would have to apply for a certificate of appropriateness to either raise or do quite a few alterations on the building. Right now, as the Historic Preservation Committee stands, they're not wishing to designate any locally, give any local designations that are not recognized by the state. So,
but they do have that authority, is that right? There was the last meeting I was at, there was a rather lengthy discussion about what it means to locally designate, and they have the authority to locally designate buildings that they see as appropriate for historic, for local historic.
That's
significance.
And they have the authority to recommend to the village board.
So the village board will always have the final say in local designation.
That's great.
Does this ordinance change the foundation or the fundamental way we identify historically significant properties? From before? From the way we did it before or no?
Locally or?
No, just at all.
I don't believe so, no.
Okay.
I mean, there are pretty clear state and federal guidelines as to how that's done. As we know, there's some subjectivity, as evidenced by the intensive survey and the questions about the accuracy of the survey. But mm-hmm. there are definitely. Trevor, is time of the essence on this?
No.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is I've read through this a few times. I'd like to speak with, or I'd like to have someone present from either Historic Preservation or the Plan Commission here at the board meeting to answer questions for the entire board. Instead of us calling them individually, I think it might be more productive. Not that you're not doing a good job representing them, but we have access to their minutes, but I think it's much different reading minutes than actually having someone in front of you walking you through the process of their rationale. And if time isn't of the essence, I'm going to be inclined to postpone this to the next meeting or such time that we're able to get one member from each of those committees to sit with us. Further discussion before I make that motion. Trustee Harris?
A specific question about what is being presented. I was trying to go back and forth and kept going as some of the discussion was happening. You said the only real changes were 30 and the 60 and 90 days, along with rewording. It's section in the 424, C4, where it talks about what the building inspector can or cannot do. Is that new? Because I can't find anywhere where it was crossed out from before. I realize you may not know it off the top of your head, especially if we're going to postpone.
424-6?
C4.
C4?
Yes.
Okay. That was just kind of splitting it up because there are two different time periods. If you're just looking to do some alterations or reconstruction on your home, then that time period is 30 days. So they want the Historic Preservation Committee wish to keep that time period 30 days.
Okay, no, I'm sorry. I didn't ask my question well enough then. In 424-6, C4, it talks about how the building inspector can make the decision without the Historic Preservation Committee's agreement to allow for raising of the structure. Is that new or is that in the previous document?
I'd actually have to look back.
Okay, that one I couldn't find.
Basically says that the committee doesn't make a decision, it doesn't weigh in after that time
if
period,
they can go ahead.
The building inspector can go ahead and issue the permit.
Yeah, okay, so I believe it's either in there or I found it off the Wisconsin Historical Society website.
Okay, thank you.
Anything further? Trevor, I'm probably going to ask you to kind of prepare a Historic Preservation 101, either document or give a little 5 to 10 minute presentation at the beginning of our discussion, the next meeting, just so that we're all on the same page as to how this all works with local designation and regular designation and right. I know a lot of the definitions and procedures are in here, but I think it would behoove us to make sure that we're all on the same page as we go into this. Unless there are objections, I'm going to open up the floor for just a couple minutes. Hearing none, Mr. O'Rourke, would you like to speak, please?
its local designation of an individual building does not need to come back to the board here. That can be done strictly at the committee level, and there are no elected officials with the exception of Steve on that committee. Steve is by default on every committee of the board in the village, so he's flat out wrong. This is the nuttiest thing I've ever seen. You have people who are not attorneys, are not well-versed at all in the regulations on historic preservations, making laws, calling up the State Historical Society, which is not a government agency, but calling up the State Historical Society and getting advice from the people who want to increase the regulation of the local housing stock. This is, again, the nuttiest thing I ever saw. What Trevor said is absolutely wrong. Individual houses do not come back here for approval by the board if they're designated individually by the committee. So there's a lot going on here. Steve said specifically there's some pretty clear-cut, clear-cut criteria for getting on the historic register. The state completely disregarded that in the Sunset Park designation. They tampered with our report. I have some pretty strong allegations here, and I think the National Park Service needs to take a look at Sunset Park. Thanks.
Thank you. So, Trevor, this the need for a still 101 to make sure that we're all comfortable with how this whole thing works. is there anyone else you'd like to speak with regard to the issue? Okay, we'll take up the rules. Mr. O'Rourke is right. I'm ex officio on all the boards, and I've visited the historic preservation meetings and have read up a bit, and I'm definitely not an expert on historic preservation, so I can imagine the rest of you who might be hearing some of this for the first time or reading some of these definitions for the first time would be even less comfortable with it. So I think we need to take some time to get ourselves up to speed. So unless there's any further discussion, I'll make a motion that we postpone this item to the next board regular board meeting or such time that at least one member from each of the aforementioned committees can be with us to participate in the discussion. Is there a second? Trustee Rafter, second? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Trevor. We will take items 8A through E unless there are objections. Is there a motion with regard to the consent agenda items 8A through 8E? Trustee Dart, second. Trustee Gast. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Excuse me. Item 9, a report regarding the Green Bay Metropolitan Sewage District meeting. Mr. Behrens.
There's a one-page note in the board packet, which is from the executive director's report for the January commission meeting at Green Bay Metro, New Water. And items C and D in there are specific items that fall in line or in response to requests from the customers for additional communication with the district. They have agreed, this is the notes, this is the handout that went to the commission, but the commission did approve establishing a budget workshop for customers in the evening. It will be in September. The date will be picked as it gets closer, so that will be an annual meeting set up so that boards and council members can attend as well as staff to review the budget. And the second item, they have agreed to put on their web page email addresses for the commissioners so that customers can contact them via email. So that's just to make you aware of those two things that they've moved forward on and agreed to do.
I'll try to remember to write a note to their board and to Tom, but if you interact with them, please thank them for
their responsiveness to our requests. Anything further with regard to the Met? Correct, anything else? That's it.
Yeah, you will have an opportunity to discuss this with them when you take the tour in February. So.
Who's planning on going to that tour?
When is it?
February
24.
So we'll be announcing it because it'll be a forum. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Burns. Mr. Fuller, item number 10, proposed quarter study schedule of events.
Based on their schedule grid sent over, which highlights the four primary meeting dates that they identified. I received word this afternoon that these might change, so.
So never mind, right?
The one on February 10th might change to the following week.
Okay.
And then that might not affect the one on March 10th.
Okay.
But the April 27th and the July 7th ones are pretty solid.
Okay.
But you will be receiving, we are going to be sending out a notice of the meeting. To invite all the committee members, all the village board, I assume, on Debbie's email list, and then putting it in the newsletter as well. It's going to be kind of a relaxed open house, charrette style, kind of similar to what the DOT has been putting together with maps laid out on the tables and inviting the residents in to come in and make their comments.
And businesses. I know that Administrator Lane has been working really hard with the businesses along the Webster Avenue corridor and along Riverside to make sure that they're engaged as much as possible. So, Brad, do you have anything to add? I know that you had some discussions with the consultants recently.
Yesterday, Craig Trevor and I sat down with the consultants to kick this off a little bit and spent about 3 hours with them talking about various areas. I was just trying to lay a little bit of foundation so that when they come back with, as they come back and start to interview some of the stakeholders, they can start to put all this together so when they have their public information meetings, they can start to lay this out as far as some of the visioning that the business owners and or residents are starting to show.
If I remember right, they also had done their homework really well in the proposal stage. So
yes.
I think we're going to enter into this with a pretty well-informed consultant.
Absolutely.
Anything further? Oh, thank you both, or all three of you, for your work on that. Administrator Lang, residency of a registered sex offender update.
Yes, I just wanted to follow up, if you recall it, or as you do recall, back in October, late September, October, the board passed a resolution to send to the rest of the communities within the state that Debbie was able to connect with, asking them to join forces to ask the state to look at changing how they do the sex registration or registry. Unfortunately, it did make the Legislative Advisory Committee meeting agenda, and they so choose to stick with what their current policy is. So,
which is no policy.
There's no policy.
Basically.
Change. It's at least it got to them and brought some awareness. So the issue that was brought from this table at least made it to that far.
To the league, though, right?
To the league.
So not the state legislature, but the league.
The league.
That's disappointing.
So the league occasionally sponsors gatherings throughout the state, and they have one in Green Bay once a year or twice a year. That they have Rock Garden, they have a
an annual meeting that they have. I think you've been there, Penny. I would encourage you to either write to the league or to show up for that. And this should be an item that's on the agenda. I know that they had a list of, what, two or three pages, that last resolution that we passed. What was it? What was the title of that resolution, Brad? Remember, you all remember there were about 15 different issues with regard to
prosperity.
TIF districts and what's that?
Partnership for Prosperity.
Partnership for Prosperity. Yeah. It's a great. So I realize they have other things that they've deemed to be on the front burner, and we might be able to more efficiently affect some change. But I think we sort of have given up on this. They've given up on this one because we've made no headway with the legislature in the past, what, 7-8 years that we've been talking about this. I think it's too important to let go. So I don't think we should let it rest. It's going to happen the way it's always happened before. Nothing goes on, right? And there isn't a sex offender moving into a neighborhood that's terribly controversial, or the neighborhood doesn't know about it, right? And then all of a sudden it explodes, and then we hear about it and we're trying to react instead of be a little bit more proactive. So in addition to the neighborhood network initiatives that Rick is working on, I think we still need to try to push this issue. So, that having been said, as a group, it doesn't seem to work going through the league. I would encourage Brad, do you think you could sort of email out some names, both at the league or at the legislative level, that we could try to contact? I think we need to get residents involved, too. I mean, I think both the league and the legislature are used to getting resolutions from villages that are supposed to represent, you know, their constituents. But when they hear from the actual individuals is when they start to listen. Trustee Harris.
I'm just, along with the email addresses or names, if we could identify if a date has been set for the meeting in Green Bay so that we know it as much in advance as possible.
Absolutely. I can get all that for you. I just also wanted to share with you, in your mailbox, I gave you a spreadsheet. Village of Bellevue put together various ordinances amongst several communities. And it's interesting reading to see how some of them align and some of them are quite different.
Right. And they'll shift, right? It happened with us, where we didn't follow Green Bay's lead, and then we ended up following Green Bay's lead. So they're going to be in constant motion unless the state steps in. Rick, I would encourage you that when Brad gets a hold of the names, that you share it with residents, especially those who are living near a sex offender and don't really appreciate the way that all shook out. I mean, someone needs to be sounding the alarm and serving as the voice of our community. And again, there's only so much we can do as a board. There's almost some disadvantage to boards sending these things. It just becomes routine and kind of responded to in the way that we got the most recent response. Fair enough. Trustee Genrich?
Just an observation. I think with our updated ordinance, you know, it's pretty strict. You know, it limits a lot of property in the village. I would think that there would be a strong chance if the league would ever try to put together something that's acceptable across the board, it would probably be more watered down than we have and have to get support. So,
but we've always contended. We're willing to,
right,
you know, take our fair share, if that's what you want to call it. But the situation we have now is this ping-ponging, you know, offenders from one municipality to the next and encouraging them to go underground. We've been over all this for running. So you're right. Any ordinance, I mean, ours is pretty strict, so any statewide statute would probably allow more sex offenders in the village than we currently allow now. But I think it would be worth it in terms of having something that's fair and consistent across the board. Anything further? Brad, before you finish, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Is there a motion to convene into closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 19.851C, considering employment, promotion, compensation, or performance evaluation data of any public employee over which the governmental body has jurisdiction, or exercises responsibility, specifically with regard to the six-month review of the village administrator. Trustee Dart, is there a second? Trustee Dennis, roll call, please. Trustee Dennis.
Aye.
Trustee Gadd.
Aye.
Trustee Dart.
Aye.
Trustee Van Oven is an aye. Trustee Rafter.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Harris.
Aye.
We're in closed session. We're going to go back to